Tucson, good morning to you. Happy Wednesday, hump day, July 22nd. You made it halfway through the week. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. For this hour of Tipping Point, in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Got another good program in the works today. Looking forward to the conversation we're going to step into in just a second. Pastor Jeff Loxton of Hope City Church will be in for our weekly segment we call Wisdom for Weird Times. We know during these times that there is comfort and wisdom in spirituality and in matters of faith. And so we want to provide a space for that here every week as we manage these uncertain and difficult times. So looking forward to that. Jeremy Mikolajczak, the Chief Executive Officer at the Tucson Museum of Art and Historic Block, will be in as well at the bottom of the hour to talk about their reopening and the brand new Kasser Family Wing, where you can see 3,000 years plus of Latin American art, a beautiful gem here in the city, and what was already a gem in the city. So looking forward to that conversation. Pastor Jeff Loxton, welcome back to the studio. How are you?
Doing well, Zach. Good morning.
So we're kicking off with a couple of verses from Proverbs, words of wisdom, wisdom for weird times. Why don't you kick it off and tell us what we're looking at today?
Yeah, from Proverbs 3:1-2, my child, never forget the things I have taught you. Store my commands in your heart. If you do this, you will live many years and your life will be satisfying.
You're right there at the top of the book of Proverbs. You know, Jeff, I think this stood out just as we were chatting this week. And again, our vision is that these are encouraging few moments a week to step back. If you're a person of faith, if you're not, this is meant to be an encouragement in these uncertain times. Oftentimes, we know they are now, right now, Jeff, people are struggling to get by. And there's the kind of this question of what if there's more to life than you're experiencing right now? And I think during these times of slowing down, that question I find pops up more and more. COVID can give you a midlife crisis real quick.
Sure.
Or in my case, maybe a quarter life crisis.
Right.
I have a friend who termed that. I'm like, that's good. I like that. A quarter life crisis.
Quarter life.
Not just midlife. It's quarter life. What's the relationship when you are guiding your faith community, Jeff, between biblical wisdom and a satisfying life?
Well, I think for me, it begins with a perspective that, as you've already said, there's more to life than just the struggles that we face. And I think it's there in that second verse in Proverbs, the idea of living many years and a satisfying life is rooted in that perspective and understanding where it is that we come from and what our purpose is. I would say it begins with the mindset, not just one towards wealth or a socioeconomic status, but one that is geared towards finding one's purpose. And I think the basis of that is being able to look outside my own problems, my own struggles, and what are the things the people around me need? What is it the people around me are going through? And looking outwardly before I look inwardly. As a person that's first born in my family and a little bit, I say a lot selfish, it forces me to wrestle with this idea that I'm the center of my own universe and there are other people around me that are going through things and being able to look at the world around me through the eyes of others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's a question in here that I think is interesting because I think that a lot of us, as we've grown up in the church, as we've, you know, maybe even some of our older listeners really grew up during a time where kind of, you know, just kind of the basic tenets of Protestantism and Sunday church and all that really defined culture. It's less so
right
now, but I think a stereotype of God and of faith is it's a bunch of rules. You'll never hit them and you will be reminded that you will never hit them.
Right.
And it's a painful experience. And so this question of what if God intended for us to thrive,
mm-hmm.
I think is an interesting question to mm-hmm. talk about for a lot of people, because I don't think that's how we see God in a lot of ways is certainly there are boundaries and guidelines and accountability built in, but you know, your premise is that the God of the Christian faith, it intends for us to thrive. Can you talk about that? Because right now, many are struggling to thrive and just get by.
Yeah, I know now, as you mentioned, a lot of people are struggling to thrive. There's this thought, well, there's a scripture that says that references God owns the cattle on a thousand hill. There have been moments in my life where I'm like, God, I know you own the cattle on a thousand hill. All I'm asking for is a part of one right now. If you could just help me out, hook me up. But God's not the genie of the universe either. And so instead of the mindset, and this I'm just speaking from my own journey, instead of the mindset of having to hit on all the rules, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, the Sunday box, I think a part of thriving is realizing that part of my filter in seeing the world around me is seeing it through the eyes of the way God intended it to be, that it is a starting point for conversations. We like to tell people at Hope City Church, Sunday is just the starting line. Monday through Saturday is where the real action is happening. And what is God leading you into in those spaces? How are you thinking of those challenges you're facing through his lenses and what he wants you to see?
For sure. Another scripture that you noted that's kind of tied to this is, out of their extreme poverty, their hearts welled up, in rich generosity. And I just think of so many people struggling right now, and wondering what the future looks like. What does it look like during a time of extreme challenge to have rich generosity, right? And we're not talking about, you know, the guy up at the front, like the televangelists, right? You know, and everyone's struggling. They're like, well, God will only bless you if you give me more money. We're not speaking about that. we're talking about what does it look like to be generous in a time of challenge? How's that transformational for a community?
This story comes to mind from this past week. We have a gentleman that just started attending on Sunday mornings and takes the bus for about an hour from the southwest side of town just to get there Sunday mornings. One Sunday doesn't show up. And as we were following up with him, because circumstances were a little more sensitive in this case, what we discovered was that the person had an interaction with someone on the bus and someone who was in a more dire situation than he was, and he was able to help that person get into housing. They were on the streets and in a place to sleep for that night, and then followed up with him to make sure he was okay. It's easy for us to look at our own circumstances and think, yeah, I'm struggling and the world is imploding and this is it. But if we'll just take notice of the people around us, that person on the bus or the person that is on the other side of the counter, and step into their world, assuming they invite us, you know, we're not forcing our way into those situations, but step into their world and say, how can I be a part of helping you? What are your needs right now? And certainly we can't help everybody, but I believe there are divine appointments for us every day if we're looking for them. And those are the moments where I think that there is great satisfaction. Mm-hmm. I made a difference in the life of one.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, it's a good way to, I think, spin away, unless there's anything else you wanted to cover to our second segment. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think in terms of summarizing, it begins with the mindset. So it's not socioeconomic. It's not wealth for wealth's sake. It begins with the mindset and perspective. And who is it that God is placing in your path for you to be able to make a difference in their life today, right now?
Mm-hmm. Jeff, I appreciate that. And again, I just want to reiterate for anyone who's jumped in since we started is there's no agenda to this at all. I think there was someone told me, and this is a bit hyperbolic, I don't, 100% believe this, but you've heard the statement, there are no atheists in the foxhole, right? When you are going through life's challenges, and 2020 is challenging. Like, I was geared up for what I thought 2020 was going to be. It's election year. It always gets testy. I kind of knew what I was getting into. But the level of stuff that we've seen in 2020 blows my mind. You mean you couldn't write a script that's any more difficult,
right?
Any more complicated. And I think it's during these times that we as humans, because I think we're tuned for spirituality. We're tuned to have experiences where we ask, there's got to be more than just kind of like the physical. Right? There's got to be a meaning to life, a higher purpose, something that we are tuned for that goes beyond just our day-to-day. That's what we're doing at these times with Pastor Jeff, is stepping back and taking somewhat of a faithful perspective on life. No agenda here. We hope this is an encouragement to you for just a few minutes a week to step back, to pull yourself away from the fray, and maybe think about things in a way that maybe you haven't before.
It's been neat to hear the feedback from people during the week who've had a chance to listen to the broadcast, Zach, and to hear the encouragement and the different places that they've come from, and seeing how that's made a difference for them.
Yep. During this time, Jeff Loxton, pastor of Hope City Church, is our faith contributor here during the week on Tipping Point. We take a little bit of time every week to step into that. We're going to go to our first break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what's happening at Hope City Church. And all that leads up to our conversation, don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, with the CEO of the Tucson Museum of Art. They are expanding a special new wing, 3,000 plus years of Latin American art, and they want you to see it. And they've made it so you can right now. We'll tell you about that. But first, our first break, and then part two with Pastor Jeff Loxton.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to DecibelCoffeeWorks.com for more info. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point, in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We're taking a break weekly now with our regular faith contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton of Hope City Church. Just take a step back and look at wisdom for weird times, a little bit of a spiritual and faith-based perspective at the uncertain times we live in now. Again, no agenda, just realizing that these are moments when we ask bigger questions about ourselves and our community, and we believe believe this to be a helpful and very short break every week from the hard-hitting news and journalism we try to do here well on the show. Pastor Jeff, welcome on back in.
Thank you.
So I wanted to chat with you in the time that we have. What's happening at Hope City Church? What are the conversations that you and your faith community there are having right now?
Yeah, the series we're in, Dispelling Fear, this week has led us to a passage in 1 John chapter 4 towards the back of the Bible. But the summary is lies have consequences. And it's not just the things that we say, understanding that people are generally these days learning to be very skeptical, especially of people with places of influence. But it's the narrative we've chosen to believe about ourselves because of what others have told us and the lies we bought into.
I see two conversations there, right? There's that if you are a person of influence or leadership, I mean, that platform just seemed to get higher in terms of scrutiny.
Sure.
How do we manage that reality?
I think at the core, there's the reality that establishing trust with people is essential. Hopefully, we want to believe the best about the people around us. Mm. We want people to believe the best about us. But when it comes to me and my interaction with people, how am I building relationship? How am I building trust? And I think that helps me to be effective in the long term when it comes to not just the people within Hope City, but the people in our community. How are we giving back, making a difference in the lives of other people in a way that they're saying, this is someone that I am willing to follow or willing to yield to. Mm-hmm. And it's mutual. It should be mutual.
Mm-hmm. The encouragement that you've given your congregation in this series, I thought this was interesting. You said, whenever we choose to lie about something or someone, we are saying, God, I don't believe you can protect me, so I will.
Hmm. Yeah, and to be clear, Alberto gave this message, and he is our worship pastor, a phenomenal person of faith, great friend, and that's a nuance of Hope City's wanting to build into others and see them develop. But that was a phrase that he had shared. I loved hearing it because it pierced my heart. You know, there's a part of me that does want to control my circumstances. And in those cases where I'm choosing to lie or manipulate or mislead, however you want to package that, at its core, what he shared was that there's this underlying story that I'm not sure God will protect me in this. And even as he said that, it's forced conversations between my wife and I as we were reflecting on that statement. What about this case? Is that okay? Or what about that case? Is that okay? Mm. And it comes back to, do I really trust that God will take care of me? Or coming back to your first comment about people of influence, do I trust that they will take care of me? And I don't know that we always do.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can resonate. I can resonate with that personally. The lies we believe about ourselves, right? I think this is an interesting topic. What are some of the? I'm an internalizer.
Sure.
I will often. My wife will all the time say, "You're making that up. You are literally putting words in someone's mouth about what you think they think about you."
Which isn't sanitary, by the way, to put words in other people's
mouths.
It's
not.
No.
Besides being like a really bad way to do life, it's not sanitary.
No.
especially during COVID-19, Jeff.
Exactly.
Don't put other people's words in your mouth.
Right. Another good case for wearing a mask.
Oh my goodness. So yeah. So how do we mask up, Jeff?
Right.
On the lies we tell ourselves.
Oh. In years of therapy, I would imagine in many of our cases, I'm thinking of my own, there was a simple interaction on the dock. My dad would never even remember this. I believe my parents are phenomenal people, great, just have loved their kids well and feel blessed by that. But there was this instant on the dock where I wanted to help my dad, and there was another kid next to me, and he said, "Can you step back for a second because you're not strong enough?" And for some reason, that little phrase, "you're not strong enough," became an underlying message for the rest of my life. I've got to prove myself. I've got to be strong enough. I've got to be. What messages have your parents told you, your friends told you, classmates told you, boss told you that you have chosen to believe that has become the lie that has kept you from realizing God's best in your life? Or maybe you're not a person of faith, but you're being kept from something better because you've chosen to give in to that lie that has been placed upon you.
Right. Any tangible examples? Any you know, you mentioned one, but...
Sure. You know, I think with our kids, I try to make sure that the words that I'm saying specific, because I'm extremely cynical. I love to be sarcastic, but I think, you know, being able to reinforce their behavior and say, this was something I noticed that you did well. Going back to my first employment opportunity, my employer in retail came to me and said, you know, Jeff, you're not fast, but you are thorough. And so I appreciated the constructive criticism. I need you to move quicker. But then she also backed that up with, you're extremely thorough. And so now when I'm in the middle of struggling through something, I'm like, I'm not fast, but I am thorough. I'm going to get this detail worked out, you know? So can we give somebody constructive criticism in a positive way, but reinforce it with a message that they're going to walk away with that is true about who they are?
Pastor Jeff Loxton, Hope City Church. That brings us to the end of this week's conversation. You're our weekly faith contributor as we look at uncertain times, wisdom for weird times, dispelling fear in uncertain times. Appreciate the moment that you help us craft on this program where we get to step back. Again, our hope is that whether you are a person of a specific faith or not, that these are encouragements. Again, I think we're wired to try and see life through a lens that is bigger than ourselves. And these are moments where we just want to take a step back for a few minutes to assess the world through that lens. Pastor Jeff, where can people go to find out more about your church?
HopeCityChurchTucson.com.
Perfect. That does it for our conversation with Pastor Jeff Loxton. Jeremy Michalachak is in the green room. He's going to be in just a second to welcome you back to the Tucson Museum of Art and a brand new Kasser family wing where you can see 3,000 plus years of Latin American history curated just for you here in Tucson. It's a gem in a gem here in Tucson. We're going to do a bit of an arts and culture segment with one of the best curators and heads of a museum in the country right here in Tucson. We'll be right back after bottom of the hour news and sponsor messages, Tucson. Don't go away. We continue after this. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome back on Tipping Point here on 1030 The Voice. It is Wednesday, July 22nd. And we are, for the balance of this hour now, sitting down with Jeremy Michalachak,
I got it.
It's always a good day and a good start. And well, I've been practicing the last couple segments there just to make sure I'm going to get it right, Jeremy. But we're with Jeremy Michalczyk, the CEO of the Tucson Museum of Art, to talk about the TMA, which is reopening safely and well.
Yes.
And the new Kasser Family Wing, which is an exciting new addition for not only TMA, but for our city, to be honest. And I've had the real honor and privilege to be a part of a community committee that you had the vision to stand up, to help shape this experience in a community that is itself defined by so much of that history. So we're excited to have you here. Give us the mission and vision of the Tucson Museum of Art, not just the on paper mission and vision,
but
you came to Tucson. I think you're one of the top curators and heads of a museum anywhere in the country.
Well, thank you.
You're here today and you have a vision that is in progress for TMA. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what the role is of the TMA here in Tucson.
So I've been in town about 4.5 years, and this project, particularly the Kasser Family Wing, has been about 3 years in the making.
Wow.
Early conversations with the Kasser family, of course, with Mike Kasser and his love of Latin American art. But going back to those early days of actually coming to Tucson, there was something that was really important about this city. The cultural fabric of what really exists here is unlike anything else in the country.
Yeah.
And there's a strength to that, and there's really a beauty to that, that was a story that was not necessarily being told. And so coming into this, there was this wonderful gem of an institution. It, you know, was just a time to sort of reimagine what its role is in the community and to really harbor some of those strengths and really build on those things, like, you know, the influence of the Latin American community here, the influence of the indigenous populations that are here. Of course, we recognize at the institution that the museum sits on indigenous lands, and we want to honor and recognize that in all that we do. But also, too, just its interaction with the community. How are we impacting communities? Were we really getting the best out of that, what we were doing? Were we seeing those return on investments? How does this community, or how does this museum really serve? So those were big questions that myself and the staff early on asked about what is really the role of this institution in the larger conversation. And our mission, you know, very simply in sort of a nutshell, is connecting art to life. And so what does that really mean, and how do you put that into practice?
Any tangible things that you've undertaken in that, I think almost 4 years you said, or a little over 4 years. So you mentioned some of the gaps that you saw. What are some of the ways that you've either done or begun to think through closing those gaps and really matching the museum to Tucson, art to life?
Sure. I think first and foremost, going back into early 2016, 2017, we initially sort of restructured the museum. That included an overhaul and complete reinvestment in sort of the physical property. So you saw a lot of things change, a lot of things cleaned up, things like that. And in addition to that, really looking at our collection, what were we collecting? What was represented on our walls? That was a big challenge for us. And that's a big challenge for museums across the country is, if we're looking at diverse populations and we're looking at a diverse cross-section of people, if not everyone's represented on your walls, that's a big challenge. And that's a big thing that needs to change. So we immediately address those right away with our chief curator, Dr. Julie Sassi, and of course our curatorial team. And we implemented our curator of community engagement, Dr. Mariana Pegno, who's had a big influence in terms of how the museum is working with the communities and really making sure that there's equity across the board, so that if somebody from an indigenous population walks into our walls, they are seeing something of themselves or their culture reflected. So it's not just necessarily looking at the traditional canon of sort of, European art.
Right. I mean, and you segued into the question that I did want to ask, and that is the way you've explained it, because it makes sense. Like, of course, we live in an incredibly diverse community with lots of history. Is that reflected in the museum? Makes sense. But this is kind of a tension in museums. I mean, this is a conversation that not all museums are as quick to embrace and to wrestle with as you are, and as the TMA is, the Tucson Museum of Art. Here in Tucson, looking at that European canon, I mean, there's been a way that museums have done what they do, how museums fundraise, how museums engage. There is a pattern that, for a lot of intents and purposes, works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you came to Tucson and go, I just don't want to have a museum that works.
Yeah.
I want to have a museum that connects.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to highlight that that those steps that you've taken.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you're seeing a lot of in sort of the national conversation of what's happening, say at SF MoMA in San Francisco or the Met Museum in New York. You're seeing lots of different conversations happen. And what's great about regional institutions like TMA is that we are nimble. We are institutions that can change very quickly because we don't have sort of that historical canon mm-hmm. that we have to sort of unfold. And that was one thing for this institution and also for this community, because the bigger question is was the community ready to accept this? And was the museum ready to accept this sort of sense of change? And it really was. And, you know, we're starting to see the benefits of that, mm-hmm. of course, changing our exhibition programs to include sort of more exhibitions that are a little bit more diverse in terms of their representation, but also not throwing, you know, sort of really expanding on what it is to be equitable, that we're still, you know, sort of supporting that traditional canon that we used to in the past, but also expanding on what it is that this museum is and serves and how it does that with the community. And also too, museums have traditionally been sort of that, you know, they do that one show that is directed at some specific community, they pat themselves on the back and they never do something else. And so what is it about making and creating meaningful relationships that makes impacts in communities so that people, one of the big comments we had going back to an exhibition like 30 Americans, which it was mm-hmm. directed at, you know, it was a top 30 African-American artists of the last sort of 60 years, was how do we continue that conversation beyond the exhibition and how do we make sort of the African-American community feel welcomed and part of this museum that has been here for 90 plus years.
Right. So bringing this, so connecting this philosophy and this art to life mm-hmm. in Tucson, where can people come and find the museum? And once they step foot in the doors, what can they expect? And then the third layer, I ask really layered questions. Jeremy's starting to glaze over a little bit.
Answers here.
We now have the COVID piece.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So again, where can you find TMA? With all this in mind, what can people expect to see?
Mm-hmm.
And give us the kind of lowdown on the CDC COVID entry precautions that you've put in place so that people can be safe when they come visit the museum.
Well, the museum actually has been located downtown since its inception. So many people don't know, it actually originated at the top of the Temple of Art and Music, where ATC currently performs. It was that second floor gallery. That was the original space.
Okay.
And then we've been in the El Presidio since the 1950s. So 4 acres downtown. And what you can see now is when we reopen on the 30th, you're going to, you know, Tucson's going to have this great opportunity to visit this brand new wing. This is the first major renovation that the museum has done since its inception in sort of 1975 when they built this building. In addition to that, we have 5 historic properties that tells the sort of the history and the story of this particular region. So we've extended some of our exhibitions, obviously, because, you know, Southwest Rising, which is a wonderful exhibition by Dr. Julie Saucy, which tells the story of the rise of contemporary art in the Southwest. That's been extended through September. And in addition, as I mentioned, you've got the Kasser Family Wing. We've reinstalled some of our collection galleries. So there's always going to be something new that somebody's going to see. In terms of CDC, in terms of regulations, we actually just had our assessment with the county. And I have to give them great credit because the county and the visitor center is doing a great job in terms of working with institutions to get them back open. And for us, it's really about limiting the number of people coming in, setting in all the procedures and protocols that CDC recommends, and of course, state and local health officials. We're wiping down surfaces, everyone's masked up. Because we're an indoor-outdoor facility, we do require masks now inside the museum. And really, again, that limitation of the number of people in the museum, you can come in. We have time ticket services. We've got 3 windows a day, 4 days a week. And you can come and have an experience where you're not going to really have to worry about sort of bumping into someone or sort of, you know, sort of challenging that physical distancing aspect of it. So, and if you sort of read what's going on, if you kind of look at those all those graphs and everything that everyone's sort of producing, museums overall are a fairly mm-hmm. sort of lower risk sort of aspect in terms of getting out there and visiting something. Sort of no more risk, I would, you know, in terms of this assessment as going to the grocery store.
Right.
So
that's exactly what I was thinking of it's probably actually safer.
Probably, you know, we're limiting, you know, the amount of people coming
sure.
in and those surfaces are getting cleaned regularly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but also too, it's about, you know, we wanted to protect our staff as well, because that's a big thing, is making sure that staff is also mm-hmm. comfortable and safe and mm-hmm. Getting us back open. We want to be that resource. I mean, you think about the times right now, museums are more important than ever. Mm-hmm. We need those sort of outlets to sit back, reflect, and really expand on sort of what's going on and having maybe a moment to escape.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to a part two of our conversation here in a minute after our break, really diving into this new wing that you've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and your team has as well, and something that I feel very lucky to have been a part of as well. So I'm looking forward to speaking to this 3,000 plus years of Latin American art and history that's now is finished and has its designated space at the Tucson Museum of Art. Before we go to break, your website, just so folks can know where they can go to purchase tickets, look at times, and plan their visit.
Sure. It's www.tucsonmuseumofart.org.
Cool. We'll leave it there. We'll go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Kasser family wing. I've been promoting this, Jeremy, by saying a new gem has been put into the gem that was already here in Tucson.
Very much so.
And so very excited to talk about this as well. COVID is here. It's not going anywhere, but things are moving on. Art is important. Culture is important. And the Tucson Museum of Art has pushed through the end of the month.
Yes.
Opens back up again for your viewing and engagement, Tucson. We'll be right back with Jeremy Michalczak, the CEO of the Tucson Museum of Art. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome on back in. Thoroughly enjoying my conversation in studio with Jeremy Michalczak, the CEO of the Tucson Museum of Art. I hope you are as well. We talked at a high level about what the TMA is, what it means for Tucson, why it's important, and some of the high-level conversations that Jeremy is really looking to forward in our museum here in Tucson. Conversations that make sense, but are institutionally difficult across the country. Yeah. Jeremy is really moving the needle here in Tucson, and I'm grateful for the opportunity just to spotlight the work that you're doing and appreciate what you do for Tucson. And we kind of queued this part two up, Jeremy, by saying that a new gem has been installed in the gem that was already the Tucson Museum of Art in Tucson. Tell us a little bit about the Kasser family wing. It's going to open with the rest of the museum on the 30th.
Yes, we open to the public on the 30th, and members get to see it first on the 28th and 29th.
I saw that picture on your Facebook of like the first, like, you know, first beam or
the
whatever.
First I-beam, vertical I-beam.
And now it's finished. It's got to feel good.
It feels amazing. I mean, this has been 3 years in the making, you know, 18 months of construction, and it's disruptive. I mean, it's wonderful to go through this process, but it is really challenging, and, you know, I applaud the staff and the community for hanging in with us during this time.
Absolutely.
But to see 36,000 square feet. It was a privately funded project through the generosity of the Kasser family. And, which is a feat in itself for this community, because, most people don't know that TMA is not a municipal funded museum. Mm. We are a separate 501c3 nonprofit organization. To see this wing really come about, and it's 100% public space. There are five amazing galleries dedicated to 3,000 years of Latin American art. That is both from our permanent collection and the collection of both the Kasser family and the Baker families, who have had a long relationship with the institution. And, in my early conversations, it was really about, here's this material, in this case, sort of ancient art of the Americas or pre-Columbian art. There was such a passion between the Kasser family and the Baker family about this particular work. And what made this sort of project really unique is that Tucson actually sits within a region to where these cultures would have existed or would have some interaction with, which sets us apart from so many other institutions, say if you were in the Midwest or sort of the Northeast. And the collection themselves coming in are going to set us apart from many other institutions. They're some of the best collections, some of the best pieces. And our curator, Dr. Christopher Driggers, has done an excellent job in terms of getting this work sort of conceptualized in a way that we can sort of present it to the public. And of course, something that we're very fortunate to have you a part of is the Community Advisory Committee. We've installed these in a couple of our sort of exhibitions where they expand a little bit beyond sort of the purview of the staff. And with this one particularly, it's really looking at the Latinx community across the board and really coming to help us shape this story and to really help us understand how this will impact and communicate with sort of our communities. So it's really been a labor of love, a labor of challenges, mm-hmm. and you throw the pandemic on top of everything else on top of it. We cannot wait to get this open and have the public, welcome and to see this amazing piece of, this work of art in itself.
It's huge. I mean, as you mentioned, it's stone's throw away, but in many cases is on the longest farmed area in North America. I mean, 4,000 years of history is what Tucson sits on.
Yes.
And so to feature 3,000 plus years of Latin American art, it's where real life and art connect.
Yes.
Right here in Tucson. What was the goal with the community committee? Just to touch on that real quick. What was your hope to get some of those outside voices who, speaking for myself, don't know much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
to be a part of this experience.
And that's what it's all about. I mean, we really don't realize that institutions do have to speak to the public. They can't sit in sort of these academic sort of bubbles. And how do we connect this material with sort of, an average person coming in? And one of the big things that we talked about early on was that this was not going to necessarily, the Kasser Wing was not going to be a mausoleum to sort of these ancient cultures.
Yes.
So not only are you going to see, pre-Columbian art from Aztec, Mayan, Mesoamerican regions and cultures, you're going to see contemporary art by Latin American artists working today.
I was excited about that.
And then in addition to that, you're going to see some, Spanish colonial painting from Peru and Ecuador and other places. So you're going to have this cross-section to really find these sort of interesting relationships. And really, when we see, school kids come in, it's, sometimes it can be tough to get them into sort of these sort of cultures like pre-Columbian work and how to get them engaged. But this way through, the work of Patrick Martinez, the LA-based artist who's using Mayan imagery in his work. I mean, finding those relationships is really important. And with the Community Advisory Committee, it's helping us to, again, contextualize what it is that we're doing. At this point, the curators are sort of the intellectual experts on this particular material in terms of time and place and why that's important. But really it's about, if we can't connect with the community, then we're really not doing our job.
Right.
And the museum itself is not making that impact that it should, because our whole goal is to inspire people to find joy, to spark wonder. Going back to sort of the idea of installation, I mean, I can't tell you how many pieces I still look at. And I think about, what was happening at that time, this culture, how advanced they were, how maybe not as advanced as we thought they were. And I mean, it's really, it transports me from this sort of daily barrage of dealing with, COVID issues and, financial issues and all the other stuff to this whole other thing that I would not normally think of. So,
right. You know, I think the being on the committee was, I think, a symbol of the conversations that I think the TMA wants to have. And that is, I felt in the room. I mean, I would sit next to, you know, a Latinx expert on some of these things, either at the university or in the community. Yep. Art and culture and history gets passed down generation by generation by generation. And because of the land, the community we sit on, it really is owned by, by those individuals.
Sure.
And here I am, you know, a relative, I've been in Tucson for a while, but relative to thousands of years of history and multifamily, I'm new to the conversation, but I care.
Yeah,
I care about the community. And if I don't know this history and culture, there is going to be a part of the community that doesn't get to access it or know it or understand it. And if we don't know our history and our culture, we can't pass it on. But there was even that in that room, like healthy tension of how do we display this in a way that is culturally honoring, but passes it down for the next generation. I have the same conversation in my neighborhood. And I think Tucson as a whole is having this conversation. And so more than, you know, a great space just to experience art, I think it's a representation of the Tucson conversation of how do we honor the past, celebrate the present, and shape the future together, because it is going to take all of us to do it.
It is. It is. And I think that's what's great about these advisory committees and also the community labels. You'll see a lot of sort of just general community members who are responding to work. And we do that throughout the museum, not just within the Kasser family wing. And, you know, they're just thoughtful insights in terms of how people respond to art. And there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, that's what I think is really important. Yeah. It's really what we take out of it or how we approach it. And, you know, for me, first and foremost, I mean, museums are the best storytellers. And the idea that we can go in and learn about something is really important. And it's absolutely true. If we don't pass these down, both in sort of this sort of more formal situation, but also to the idea of interactions between different individuals, then again, we're really not doing the best to really, you know, preserve culture. And that's something that's really important as we go forward, not only with just this wing, but with future exhibitions as well.
We're ticking a little under 3 minutes, so I don't want to leave without, again, kind of giving listeners a tangible next step. I imagine that of all the wings and areas to look at, this is going to be really popular at first. Is there any pre-registration or anything that people need to know to visit this wing in particular? Or can you review how to register for tickets?
So we have timed tickets. We have 3 timed windows, 10, noon, and 2 o'clock every single day. We're open Thursday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. People can reserve tickets online. And everything primarily right now can be touchless. So we're trying to keep everyone safe. So, you know, hopefully people feel good about coming into the museum. And there is a limited amount of people that we allow during the day. So we only allow 75 visitors per window. So we're trying to keep it nice and wide and open for everyone. But I would say the Kasser Wing, of course, is going to be a very popular exhibit in the next couple months. But it's here to stay. And so that's the wonderful thing, is that you can come back time and time again to see not only what's in there now, but what will be there in the future as well. In addition to that, the rest of the museum is open and available to the public. So Southwest Rising is extended, so you can see this other great exhibit that unfortunately got shut down, I think, 2 weeks into the pandemic. So that's been extended. And then we have a really great and robust year also lined up as well. So there's lots of things to come. You know, we're all weathering through this. And I know arts and culture is really challenged right now by a lot of, you know, what's happening. But we're excited to get open among some of our other colleagues in the city and the county and really provide this opportunity for people. So they can go to their website and buy tickets. They can also call the institution as well and order tickets.
And that website, one more time,
is TucsonMuseumOfArt.org.
Jeremy Michalajczak, did I say it right on the back end? I bookended it.
You're good.
It right in the beginning. I did it right in the end. Hardest task of the day. Jeremy, thank you so much for coming into the studio and chatting with us.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all the hard work. Really thankful to have just a small piece of this massive effort. Tucson, go visit the Tucson Museum of Art. Go see the Kasser Family Wing, a real gem here in Tucson. A lot of great people worked really hard on it. And thanks for the hard conversations that you're taking on and what you mean for Tucson.
And thank you for your support.
Absolutely. That does it for us here on Tipping Point, this Wednesday edition here on 1030 The Voice. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster, as always, at noon. We've got a couple of conversations about politics and the races that are coming to a close here the next couple days in the August 4th primary. We'll circle back to that through the end of the week. Lots more to go. Don't go away. 9 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Stay healthy, Tucson. Zach Yenser signing out.